minutes, you'll have opportunity to be talking. So if you're not seated close enough to talk to somebody, you'll want to make that happen. I have a question for you to get started.
No.
And that,
no.
Thank you.
And
we're done. Not yet.
Oh, but, I see them, some of them have them.
Well, they might have them from last time, or they might be head start. All right. Here's the question. How did your listeners respond to the last sermon you preached? If you're not a preacher, how did you respond to the last sermon you heard? But preachers, how did your listeners respond? And I want you to pick the sermon that, you know, the most recent one. Go with it. Concrete example. How did your listeners respond? Please chat among yourselves. Yeah.
Remember the last
one.
One week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 1 month.
Excuse me for interrupting. I wonder about your response to that second question. How do you know? And up here we have a really interesting example. So, Pastor, how do you know your listener's response to your last sermon?
Well, I cheated. I brought somebody with me from our worship and planning team, praise team, and she's telling me that she responded, and then she's sharing how that connected in her actual work and everything. And I'll just let Cassie tell you how it connected.
All right. Well, he was preaching on Jonah and the worm, but I took it a little bit differently. Instead of the worm is like it's decaying the apple, it's eating away at it. And what I said is the worm in my heart that's decaying it is my personal wants. Like, I want a new job that pays a lot more money. I don't want to be in my job because I work with people in the community who have disabilities, mentally, physically, and they have, like, autistic and stuff. I work with people doing job search that we're trying to find jobs for them that they can't physically do the job or they can't mentally do the job, they don't understand. And we do home care, and what I was saying to Steve is, I want to quit my job. I hate it, but yet God has placed me this miraculously because my degree is in business management, not human service. And working with a 17-year-old who has a 3-year-old level, we can have the worst day, and I'm like, God, you have to take me out of this. I can't do this anymore. He gives me that hug of reassurance that's like a hug from God saying, just be present. This is what I want for you. This is what you need, not what you want. So that's what I got.
You're missing is I played the clip from Veggie Tales when Jonah's on the bluff and he's going, okay, God, I did what you told me to do. Now fry him. And the worm does it. The worm points out that, you know, this is about you, not about God's grace. And she got that.
So isn't this a great conversation right here? So what was preached, what we were thinking about, one of the ways you illustrated it, and what was understood, the meaning that was construction, actions perhaps to be taken related to this, and the way that the scriptural metaphor was used and to speak to a situation in your life.
How common is this conversation?
How common is that conversation? How often do you have the conversations before or after you're preaching?
Sometimes, but it's an exception rather than a rule.
It's an exception, right? So,
especially in terms of specifics. You know,
yes.
We don't really get down to it at all.
That's right. That's right. In fact, so the work that I've been doing, several of you were at an earlier workshop. I don't want to provide a repetitive explanation, but I'll give a little bit of that so you know from where I get these statistics. But 78% of listeners in churches in the United States have never spoken to a pastor about a sermon. Did you hear that number? 78%
of members.
Right. Have never spoken. So it's systemic. It's not you. Right? Preacher, you can be quite approachable, kind, open, longing for such information,
and not have access to it. Talking to the preacher about the sermon is almost taboo. How can you proceed without great information like this? How much better would it be to have that and to have it in advance? Apparently, it can really make a difference. So I have been a professor of communication, studying the transformative power of the spoken word, directing a teaching and learning center for faculty, studying teaching and learning, like preaching and listening, got involved in a project with preaching, a Lilly-funded project. We had hundreds of preachers over, it's longitudinal, that means it takes a really long time, right, over more than a decade and over 30,000 listeners. So statistical analysis of survey responses, analysis of videotaped sermons, a whole process of professional development, focus groups of listeners, listener journals. I learned a lot about the listener. And I'll be sharing just a little bit of that with you. But there's nothing from what I've shared that's as good as this, as what you've just witnessed. That conversation about the powerful scripture that was spoken in the community of a congregation. One of the things I learned in an earlier study of 100 representative churches from across the United States is that preachers preach expecting change, and listeners listen for the purpose of spiritual growth. Change is what it's about. And yet, there are so few sermons that result in change or ask for change. So it's about 5% from the sampling that I was doing. What do those look like? Those sermons that ask for change and get it? And that change is spiritual growth based on the truth of Scripture. Well, they have some characteristics. And in the earlier workshop, we were reviewing some of those changes that clergy made in preparation that showed up as spiritual growth in the lives of their listeners as a result of the preaching. One of those was listening to your listeners as part of preparation. Listening to your listeners as part of preparation. I wonder how satisfied you are with the feedback you're getting right now. I'm going to give you a handout, and if you can open it to the back of the first page, there's a quick survey that asks you how satisfied you are with the response, with what you know about your listener's perspective before, during, and after the sermon. There's some other things in this handout you can just pass them along. And overall, there are many reflective practices that the clergy in the study, several hundred of them, participated in as they documented their preparation and did some critical reflection. This is part of it. What's going on with listeners in my church? So just the back of the front page there, quick survey, how satisfied are you?
You want us to do it?
Yep, go for it.
You're addicted to surveys, aren't you?
Pretty much. More addicted to sermons. Which makes me really weird to my kids.
that again, this will be shorter. Which of these stood out for you as you put down your answer, provoked you, made you consider or reconsider something that's happening in your congregation? If there's at least one to talk about, would you share that with somebody right now?
You're probably weird to your pastor, too.
Yeah. Pardon?
You're weird to your kids. You're probably weird to your kids.
Yes. I can't really think of a constituency which I've not been to, Vice Chancellor of the State University. Have you read that book, Outliers?
No.
Check it out, because I've got some different the very affirming Outlier, Joe, can't think of it right now. How things change. Outlier. But in statistics class, we're trying to check them.
So I share it.
Are pretty low. Sometimes when I think a sermon has been powerful, I hear absolutely nothing from anyone. Other times when I feel less confident about my preparation because it's been a busy week, I'll get a few more good sermon than usual when I'm shaking hands after the service. Virtually no one tells me they are growing spiritually because of the sermon. No one. I have kind of unconsciously concluded that they come to church for some reason, but their motivation has nothing to do with the sermon. So here we have a direct contradiction in what the listeners are saying, in that, hey, the sermon matters. This is where I get leadership for my spiritual journey. And preachers think, I don't think anything's happening because nobody's talking to me. Right? So this nobody's talking to you, other than a great illustration here, is systemic. And shaking it up can make a difference. It can make a measurable difference.
as one of those results from the Graham study over time, was that listening to your listeners as part of preparation changes the communication, the sermon communication, the preaching, and such that we can measure greater spiritual growth in listeners. So I want to talk about one way to do that based on some piloting in a whole variety of churches. Before we do that, we have a hand in the back.
Well, how is that question asked?
Which question?
The question about the...
What element of the service, yes.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So they're assuming that there is an element, they need to answer to an element, right?
It is an open-ended question.
Okay.
So, yes. But they are not, the elements are not listed for them.
Oh,
so
okay.
They could say anything.
Yeah.
Right? It was an open-ended question.
The assumption of the question, I guess, is that's...
That something is meaningful.
Yeah. Or
that's right.
Right, I guess.
That's right. And there surely were some non-responders. One of my favorite responses to the surveys in all these churches is I, you know, enter them, and then they're open-ended places at the very bottom. It said, "Dear researcher, get a real job." And another one said, "This pastor is a hottie." And then in really small letters, "Yes, this is his wife." Things to keep you going when you're, crunching numbers. Yes.
I was going to ask, how did the responses to this question relate to the earlier one? How do you all interpret it? Where you said only 5% said the sermon made any impact in their lives.
Yeah, it's interesting. Those are two different studies. So the question was, which element of the service is most likely to have an impact on your spiritual journey? So it was asking in that survey, in general, which element of the service? Whereas in the longitudinal study, the specific responses were about activation for a specific sermon. So in this sermon that you heard today, you know, now what are you thinking, what will you do, what those sorts of things. So that was another difference. So there is this great expectation, there is this great hope of listeners that something here today that is spoken will inspire growth for me. When asked, what does that look like today with this sermon, it is rare that listeners can talk about something specific. Yeah. Again, two different studies, but asked very differently. Great question. You're listening. That's really great. All right, so there are lots of ways to listen to listeners, and I already know from some side conversation that several of you have good illustrations here. But I want to tell you very rapidly about some of the ways that other clergy have listened to their listeners, and then focus most of the rest of our time on one specific way. So methods of listening to listeners, sermon communication, that's my term, input boxes or preaching boxes, well marked in a conspicuous location, little card. Sometimes there could be a prompt, like sermon thoughts. Could you preach about dot, 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 and then they fill in the space. Sermon musings. I've been wondering, dot, 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 and they fill in the space. Sermon stories. I've got a story for you, and they write a story. A curiosity box would be another approach. I'm curious about this passage. No specifics, but it just makes me curious. Post-sermon response, so bulletin inserts with prompts to guide their response. This is not an outline with blanks to fill in, but rather a method of processing, as we would expect as we teach and learn in other settings. A pre-sermon series contribution, for example, an announcement could be made that for an upcoming sermon series on gratitude, list some specifics for which you're grateful, and then these submissions are used to create a visual display of our congregation's collective gratitude. Already in place, and a way to serve as a catalyst for what will be next. Of course, some of you blog,
and those can be interactive. And blogging about sermons to come, sermon topics and passages to come, and a great way to gather comments, be provocative, gather comments that feed your preparation. Listeners are begging for processing time, begging for it, right? They're written reflections allowing time in the service for a short written prayer response, and this is a prayer back to God. God has spoken today through you, the steward of the mystery, and they will write. They can write back to God, and having some time for that. You might ask them to share their written response with a trusted other before the day is through, to post that prayer on your sermon blog or in some other place. It depends on the appropriateness of the topic, or to put that written prayer in the response box. We're up for tweeting sometimes, so this is another way. Respond to the sermon in 140 characters or less, and that can really generate some interesting dialogue that fuels you as well, or in advance to the sermon topic. At least once a year, surveying your listeners to discover current information about their spiritual journeys. Demographic characteristics, yes, but let it go deeper than that. Bravely open that dialogue by asking for input about what's valuable when the community is engaged in preaching and listening. And phrasing those questions around spiritual growth, what's happening individually for you, what's happening in the life of the congregation, how are we transforming through God's grace our community, how are we connecting to what's happening globally. Situate the questions not as evaluation of your preaching, but as reflection, critical reflection, on results. What's happening here? If you're in a large church, you can use clickers to get immediate feedback, even during sermon, misconceptions about particular theological concepts or experiential levels. How many of you have done this or not done that? And that can be really interesting. Again, begging for processing times, things like think, pair, share during the sermon, a very specific question, write, then talk, share, 5 minutes. That processing time aids memory. A very early study back in the 90s showed the majority of, I'm so sorry to say this, listeners couldn't remember the topic of the sermon on Tuesday.
I say that about my own sermon.
Yeah,
so someone asked me, what did you preach on last week? I have to think about it.
Because you're looking forward, right?
That might
it was
be
so
one
glorious
reason.
That if you thought about it too long, you might swell up and cry. So you have to just let it go. That's it. I would also suggest teaching about preaching and listening to God and how we listen to God, and encouraging a sermon response through journaling. And this was part of one of the long-term studies we did was people journaling and in response, and then allowing us to collect that and analyze that. How do they listen? Are they evaluating? Are they documenting? Interesting from those journals that one thing that could shake them out of their listening habits is a provocative question from the preacher not answered. Interesting. Yes?
I want to back up a couple steps if you allow it.
We'll see. No.
You said processing time aids memory.
Yes.
Memory can be information oriented. And you're talking often about formation versus information. Is there a way to aid particular kind of memory that's more conducive to spiritual formation rather than just retention content?
Yes. Yeah, and I think, how long can we stay? Not that much longer.
The worship service is at 5.
Answer is it's at 4.
Oh, four, right.
A huge piece of that answer is story. And it's not a surprise to you. But there is a lot of excellent research on memory and adult learning and change and activation. And I would encourage you that these texts should be your texts, you know, and that this is what you are involved. What?
You got a bibliography?
I do.
But you know you?
Yeah. All right. A couple more, and then we're going to look at these pre-sermon dialogue groups. Bookmarks. So a bookmark with the scripture passage or references for next week's sermon, and asking that on the flip side of that bookmark, they do some thinking. Read the passage, write down their thoughts, questions, reactions on the back of that bookmark. Again, that's going to be short, and bring that to next week. So that they're in a different place as they listen. You know that right now, if I said, if there is anyone in the room who can recall every word I say in the next 20 minutes, I will give you this check for $100,000. It's left over from the Lilly money. All right. So could you listen differently if I was able to do that?
So far, so good.
All right. So, hypothetical example. So, but the energy that we give to listening is a choice. And how much we recall has to do with how much energy and how present we can be in that moment. And we can shift that listening energy. We can shift our listening purpose. Are we listening to evaluate? Are we listening to empathize? I'll tell you, when some pastors, where I am known in Wisconsin, now I'm in Minnesota, but see me come in, they get a little nervous. As much as I want to encourage pastors and provide useful information, and I have let them know time and again, I can switch my listening purpose. I am here for spiritual growth, not for evaluation. Now, if you want that, we can do that too, but we can switch that. So how much energy your listeners are investing is variable and can be different based on their choice. So these are some of the ways that pastors in the study started listening to their listeners, recognizing their need for exegesis of their listeners. But the primary way that most of them did that listening was through a pre-sermon, so in advance, dialogue group, in which they situated themselves as the listener. So what I want to share are the logistics of making that work. There were two variables that determined whether or not it worked. When it worked big. It worked well. But one, I just said them, was that the pastor was able to listen, not lead that conversation, though I know there are other examples. This made a difference with this year-long study. And the other was that certain logistics were implemented, and when they weren't, it didn't work. And you think, oh, logistics, this is the less interesting part. And yet, absolutely necessary to make a group like this work in its first iteration. So piloting a pre-sermon dialogue listening group is worth your time because of the results for listener spiritual journeys. But also, the listeners bring a different kind of energy. And they can describe it, and the pastor can describe how that energy pre-sermon and during sermon rejuvenates them. In the very first study, the one thing pastors wanted most was fresh material, fresh perspective on my material. And listeners can provide that. There they are, right there. Let me describe for you very specifically here an example of a pre-sermon dialogue group. I'd call them sojourner groups. You could call them anything you want to, but it's just not as clunky as pre-sermon dialogue group. So this is a sojourner group that's been going on for a few weeks in a mid-sized mainline congregation. The pastor is Pastor Lon, L-O-N. Eight people are present, including a teenager, an elderly widow, and a middle-aged man new to the church. After a parishioner's opening prayer, Pastor Lon thanks everyone for coming and assumes his role as listeners.
as listener. The facilitator he has chosen, Juanita, is skilled and prepared. She reviews familiar territory, confidentiality, time limit, content focus, authenticity, and appreciation. And then Juanita announces, next month, Pastor Lon will be preaching a series on worry. She and Pastor Lon met briefly to plan the open-ended process, though many of these groups, once they were established, that was just an email connection. First in this session, there's a short brainstorming time. What have you worried about in the last week? The list on the whiteboard grows long. Pastor Lon jots down a thought as a teen reveals his worries about the potential for a world-ending terrorist attack. Then the listeners are asked to disclose a specific and recent worry, describing their thinking and feeling in detail. Discussion about the difference between anxiety and worry unfolds as someone reveals he is taking anxiety medication. And then a documentary about the culture of fear promoted in the media is mentioned. Two of the participants have seen it. Finally, Juanita reads Matthew 6:25-34, asking group members to record questions the passage raises for them. After a few minutes of quiet journaling, participants are invited to share. There's a question about lilies, another about how prayer affects worry. Most common is this kind of refrain: I know I'm not supposed to worry as a Christian, but I don't know how to stop. With 5 minutes remaining, the facilitator brings the conversation to a close and invites Pastor Lon to move his chair to the center of the group. These listeners lay their hands on his shoulders and head, praying for his preparation for this sermon series, asking God to speak through their preacher so that those who are present may encounter the living word. That's Pastor Lon's pre-sermon dialogue group.
So he does that sort of before a sermon series. That's not like a weekly thing as much as a...
These sojourner groups vary dramatically. So a preacher needs to document preparation habits and then determine at what point in that process would it be most valuable for me to hear from listeners. At what point in that process? That does vary. So one of the churches I'm thinking of was all series preaching, 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time. So there was a once a month Saturday morning brunch, and it was a little lengthier than the others. A priest in a very large Catholic church has a Wednesday lunch. Yeah, 45 minutes. He won't live without it. It's been going on for years. And the weekly is probably the most common, but some work very much in advance. We have one pastor who, bless him, prepares so far in advance. So he has a summer retreat with himself and schedules it out for the year. And so then it varies for him based on passages. If you're preaching from the lectionary, it's up to you. How far in advance do you work? You know, if you're thinking about the text that's 3 weeks out, that's when you may need this. So that is one of the logistics that was do or die. If you select the time well so that it works with your own preparation, it will contribute to whether or not this is successful. So some of the other logistics, shall we review? First has to do with the group members themselves. I think the first time I had to try this, I was going to bring my friends in. And they know how they like their coffee, and it'll be good. However, it is easy for a group like that to be thinking about the same kinds of things you're thinking about. In one church with a pastoral team of five, they had all seen the same movies, and they were all male, and all their wives hung out together. They all were the same stage of life. They are great guys, and they didn't challenge one another much. And the goal here is to get representative, diverse perspectives from your congregation.
So here we have the selection of group members is based on the not only stages and ages that vary in your church, but also stage of spiritual growth. So one could be quite elderly and new to faith, or having been in a long church a long time, be new to a faith journey. So having variety in the spiritual stage is also part of how to pick the group members. But that affects the time as well. So if you want everyone to be in the group known as the retired ones, there is a time, and there are lots of times that might be okay. But if you're trying to get a teen in your group, that might be at a different time. So you see how these logistics matter so much, right? So who are you going to invite? And we're looking for 5 or 7 people. This group had 8. And people who are different from one another, who would not normally be in conversation with you or with one another, and who have different perspectives about just about everything. And it is also important, we discovered these are like the best practices out of which groups really worked, and to invite them personally. So this is not an announcement made in church. We're going to have this group, and if you want to come, you'll either get no one or you'll get some predictables. Right?
Well, maybe so, someone you're not sure you want
to hear. That's right. That's right.
Let's be honest.
So, and if that invitation could be something like, let's say, we'll use me as an example. If a pastor came to me and said, you know, I am going to pilot one of these sojourner groups, and I'd like you to be in the first round of that if you would be willing, because you're the only professor who goes to this church, and the university is just a couple blocks away, and I need to understand student-faculty perceptions better. Well, I'd be there, right? So that sort of invitation. And yesterday, some were worried about the people who aren't invited, and so it's how you talk about this publicly, that this will be rotational, and I want different kinds of people, and all of your perspectives are very valuable, and so forth. And having other ways that you get listener information can help. But inviting them and having them be representative of the congregation. Then also another logistics piece, if you heard from the pastor, one example is to have a facilitator. Now, I am certain, because somebody already told me, that it is possible to facilitate your own group and to have that grow into an interactive dialogue. It is also possible and seems to be more likely that listeners who do not know you particularly well will be affected by your role in their conversation, perhaps deferring to your leadership, perhaps being quiet about certain kinds of things, and you possibly being the one who has all answers, could be inclined to answer questions if they are directed towards you, which is not what this conversation is supposed to be about. So you heard the open-endedness of the process that was facilitated by this facilitator. So selecting someone to facilitate, someone who's known to be pretty good with group interaction, meeting with that person to talk about what you want to do, that's going to take a little more time up front, but ultimately it will provide a kind of synergy that makes for efficiency. And we have lots of pastors saying, yes, that's what happened. The facilitator and the group members should know what is the length of each session and of my commitment. So it's going to be 45 minutes. It's going to be Wednesdays at noon. There will be lunch. We'll never go over, and I'd like you to commit for 4 weeks. Can you do that? And not open-ended, indefinite, and always running over because the conversation's just so good, or you know. But instead, what people are gifting you with is their time and their own stories. So that respect is really an important logistical piece. The session scheduling was already mentioned, but I want to make sure you have it in. You're taking any notes right now, and that is, when does it work for you? That's why if you try this the very first time, make it a short period of time, like for one series or for 4 weeks or something, so you can change it up. So you realize really, I'm not ready for it yet. On Wednesday, I just have to admit, Friday is my go-to day, so a Saturday morning thing or a Thursday evening really would work better for how I prepare. Whatever it is, documenting your own preparation is the first part of this critical reflection process anyway. So knowing what you're doing and the order you're doing it and what your habits are and where this would best fit is important. The first session is also very important. And it is likely best if you don't make that about an upcoming sermon, but rather about the process and the expectation and your communication of your desire to have their perspective. They need to know in that first session that what they provide will refresh and reshape the sermon, but they're not going to be telling you what to preach and how to preach it. And the facilitator can help you with that. That's not the nature of the conversation, as you could see from the example from Pastor Ron's church. You also have to get them to commit to confidentiality and assure that you will do the same, that the facilitator will do the same. You have to display your confidence in the facilitator and tell them that you're going to be quiet, so you have some accountability there, and that you're going to situate yourself as listener, not in the circle, but as listener. Yes?
So it's interesting to me, like, there's a confidentiality piece, and yet they're sharing things that you want to use in your sermon.
That's right.
So how do you balance that? Sort of have them say, I'm going to tell a story, but this is private information?
Right. So if you heard, like, the Pastor Lon example, somebody says they're taking anxiety medication.
Exactly.
So you're not going to say, hey, did you know Bob's, during your sermon, right? Of course you're not going to say that. But you may not have thought about the percentage of the population that is medicated for anxiety, and you might look that up now,
right,
and then be able to reference it, and Bob's going to know where that came from, but you're not talking about Bob. Now, every once in a while, of course, somebody's going to share a story that is just like, oh my goodness, that is perfect, I want that story. There you can, and you can say this in the first meeting, you could ask for permission to share it, and such stories should only be shared with permission and when they affirm someone in the congregation is doing what we're talking about, as opposed to the opposite, right? And it is also very possible to craft a hypothetical story based on the story. So what was powerful about that person's personal experience? And can I find a similar story, or can I create a hypothetical story that is based on that experience? So,
is it helpful to actually stand in front of the congregation and say, please don't spend my sermon time on trying to figure out who this is connected to? Because they might know who's in the group, and then be like, because you can also find stories from completely other places that have nothing to do with that.
That's right.
And
that's,
I wonder, right, if there's some people who are like,
hey, where did that come from? Yeah, I think you know
educate
that.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah, if you need to do that, you would know that. Yeah. The expectation for how long it will last, how grateful you are that they'll do this, and that this session, and they should know that in advance, is not about a sermon, but about getting to know one another and thinking about how sermons have been transformative for them. One group used Psalm 78, the first four verses, to focus their first conversation, to kind of give it a go. And then some other groups picked up on that. It's about listening. Listen, dear friends, to God's truth. Bend your ears to what I will tell you. I'm chewing on a morsel of a proverb. I'll let you in on the sweet old truths, stories we heard from our fathers, counsel we learned at our mother's knee. We're not keeping this to ourselves. We're passing it along to the next generation. God's fame and fortune, the marvelous things he has done. So one of the groups that used this crafted a prayer from that. They did that in their first session, and then they used this prayer every time they gathered. Here's the prayer. Bend my ears, O God, to your wisdom. Let me hear you speak through this one you have called. Open my soul, enable my focus.
May I be present, ready to respond. I welcome the transforming power of your grace. You know me. Let me know you more. Let me listen. Let me grow. Amen. So that first session gives them practice at responding to Scripture and gets them to have some degree of comfort with one another and with the interaction. Because you are breaking systemic patterns of communication. They're not used to speaking with the preacher about sermon content. So I know that you may have questions. I also want to tell you Pastor Lon's reaction. But before that, I wonder, Steve, if you might share what you're doing in your church with a pre-sermon dialogue group.
What we're doing, when I first came to this church, First Reformed of that, I was a student still at Western Seminary. And I happened, by God's grace, to be in my ministry's worship class. And so I began this conversation to stand with the praise team and the worship planning team, in part by a way as to enable me to prepare to preach, because I was still doing my cradle in my last semester, and also a way to teach about worship. And in the midst of that, we began to have these dialogues, and we would work out about 4 weeks. Sometimes it shrinks, sometimes it grows, and we would live into the text together, and we would enter into the text as a group. And what I began to find was that they began to inform my preaching. And while at times I was informing their listening, invariably they would offer insights that I had either missed or didn't catch. And it was always so helpful. What it's become for me is it's become my time of worship. It's also helped me endure, I'm only 3 years in, the fourth year in the ministry, those periods of drought that come. I don't unexpectedly that they talked about it in seminary, but you really kind of did hear the teacher tell you about it, and you just figured that was for old preachers, and you begin to realize that, no, after you get over the honeymoon period, that those times come. These sessions sustain and carry me. When I don't have the words to preach and the text is not grabbing me, and for that I'm just eternally thankful.
Thank you.
Yeah, but for those of us on the worship planning team, that's our small groups too. It's not just his.
Yes.
I've been on for 3 years. And for us, it's a small group too. We actually go see him as a person. We don't put him up on a pedestal. We're not scared to talk to him about his sermons because we get to know him as a man.
Right.
So you've broken this pattern that's age old and so common. They did not pay them to.
The other neat thing is that in the midst of this, in the reminder of our humanity as pastors, it's very refreshing to, you know, when you goof up front, to have people in the midst of the congregation that know you so well that they can laugh. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly freeing because it allows me just to be me. And that's been an incredible gift.
And this example is a group that's ongoing and a group of leaders. And the examples I'm talking about are a little bit different than that, but the principle is the same of listening to listeners. And who knows what might develop over time. So what I was studying was churches where it had not existed and they were starting it. How did they get it going? In many of the churches that I studied, the groups didn't want to stop when their turn was over. In one Presbyterian church, there are 3 groups going right now. The preacher is only in one of them listening, but the others just wanted to keep timing because it increased their readiness and their listening. Let me tell you what Pastor Lon said about that group interaction that I observed and recorded for you. He says this is how the listening to listeners affected him. First, I realized the examples I was planning trivialized the kinds of things teens were worrying about, like wearing brand name clothing. Then I started thinking about how pervasive worry and fear are in our lives and what the passage taught about God's character. Everybody in the group thought worrying was inevitable. So I wondered for just a moment if the sermon was pointless. I started thinking about our need for control as a root cause of worry. That changed the direction I was going, which probably would have left people worrying about their worrying rather than having their faith affect this aspect of their lives. Listening to listeners, increasing the transformative impact of sermon communication in the lives of listeners. That's from Pastor Lon, from Pastor Steve, from listener Cassie, and from listeners across the country. Thank you for what you do as preachers.
Thank you.
Listeners are great.